When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where we are now into week two of the NBA offseason and no new roster moves have been made. So by all accounts, it seems like the Lakers have put things into complete cruise control. Nay, make that koozie control. Tommy koozie. I don't know if that's the type of control you necessarily want to have, but hey, at least we've got Summer League basketball and Team USA's Olympics run to distract us. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. And Tommy, how do you feel about being bumped down to the title of second most important Tommy in Lakers land behind, of course, Tommy koozie?
I think it's presumptuous that I was bumped down, given how he has looked in the Summer League so far. But, you know, at first I was really excited. There was another Tommy around. It's always like Tommies stick together. That's something non-Tommies don't really know about this, but Tommies like to stick together. This Tommy, I don't know. I'm undecided on him. We'll have to see how he does in Vegas. But yeah, that's my quick thought on other Tommy.
Maybe you want to be bumped down to number two because Tommy koozie is number one for infamous reasons. But with that said, on today's episode, we are going to talk more about the Lakers free agency / offseason, what their options are, how things have been transpiring or not transpiring. And if we have time at the end, we'll also talk a little bit about Summer League, Dalton Connect, Bronny James, Maxwell Lewis. But first, Tommy, let's start here. Let's talk about how we're currently feeling as fans about the Lakers' continued inactivity. So for me, I don't know if it's just because the main action of free agency has already finished and 90% of the rest of the NBA's moves are over and we no longer have that FOMO of seeing deals and signings happen left and right. But for me, the more the dust has settled on this offseason, the more okay and comfortable I am with the Lakers standing pat, surveying the landscape, and keeping their options open. Now, I want to be clear, I'm not okay with them standing pat for the entirety of this offseason, but as it stands right now, I'm okay with their current situation because we are not even past the second week of July yet. Vegas Summer League is just starting up when all of the GMs across the league are going to be mingling with one another. And yeah, I don't know. Not having that FOMO of teams wheeling and dealing left and right and signing guys, that probably has a large effect on where my sentiments lie. But even beyond that, dare I say, Tommy, that I actually may even like where the Lakers currently stand because I think they're eventually going to make a move. It just hasn't come yet. And for me, the silver lining I'm taking is that at least they haven't jumped into some panic Russell Westbrook type trade where they tear things down to the nails like they did in 2021 and are treating things more like 2022 when, yes, that was a very tumultuous offseason with Russell Westbrook still on the roster, Lonnie Walker, Dennis Schroeder. We traded for Pat Beverley and coming into the season with a new head coach in Darvin Ham, a first-time head coach in Darvin Ham. Darvin Ham was saddled with six guards. Those were not fun times. And yet, if you remember what happened during the trade deadline, we entirely flipped that team and made a run to the Western Conference Finals. But obviously that required some patience on our end. Not saying that's going to happen again, but we literally have precedence for something like that happening if we're feeling that sort of crunch right now. And having said all that, we're in a much better position than we were in 2022. But I don't want to speak for you. Where do you currently stand on the Lakers still not making any moves? Has your sentiment changed on the Lakers offseason a bit? Are you more resigned to them not making a move? Are you more enraged that they still haven't made a move? Or do you, like me, have some post-nut clarity now that the dust has settled on most of the major moves of the offseason for the rest of the NBA?
Yeah, I think when we last talked about this, I said, I don't know if I said I was disappointed, but I was like leaning more on the negative side of the scale. Now that it's become clear that, you know, the list of players that LeBron was willing to, like, take his pay cut, his alleged pay cut for, was pretty short. You know, reports have come out about, like, what happened on the guys that, you know, we quote-unquote missed out on. And they were sort of, like, what we kind of suspected in most cases. So that was, like, validating. I think, like, where I currently stand is I kind of agree with you. I mean, no move is better than a panic move. The lack of moves so far show me that, like, the front office is, you know, while they're willing to do certain things for LeBron, right, like draft Bronny, give Bronny a guaranteed contract, you know, continue to give LeBron these, like, huge offers deep into his career, basically any structure he wants, you know, they're willing to do things for him, but they're not willing to mortgage the entire future of the franchise if they don't think it's the right move. Now, we can disagree on, you know, what the right or wrong move is, but that principle seems to have been, like, pretty well instilled between their activity, or lack thereof, I guess I should say, at the deadline this past season and so far this summer. So that is, like, a reason to be encouraged. I think, on the other hand, you know, if you want to think about a little reason to be a little discouraged, our roster is tangibly worse. Now, we have basically the same team. We added Bronny and Dalton Connect, and we lost Torian Prince and Spencer Dinwiddie. And, you know, we're not playing a game of potential right now. It in terms of our go-forward next season roster, if we make no other moves, that's net worse, right? Like, Bronny, like, Dalton Connect versus Torian Prince, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, Torian's a veteran, but maybe you could say that that's comparable. It's a huge, I mean, Bronny James is not ready to play in the NBA right now, right? So it's like Spencer Dinwiddie's a legit guard in the NBA. That's a big downgrade. So, you know, it's like those types of things need to be cleaned up. But again, it's just like leaning on the sort of negative way of thinking about things. When you take a step back, it's like there's still time. There's still ways to dump minimum guys we have. There's still maybe more trades. And so it's like, you know, there are still, like, losing Torian Prince and losing Spencer Dinwiddie are not, like, season breakers when you look at who else is out there for, like, minimums or around that range. And so, you know, there's still time to sort of right the ship.
For me, I'm just glad that they haven't overreacted and over-course corrected. I'm glad that they haven't given up two first-round picks in Rui Hachimura and even D'Angelo Russell for Jeremy Grant. I'm glad they haven't given up Rui Hachimura and D'Angelo Russell for Bruce Brown, Tommy, which is apparently a real proposal out there.
You don't know basketball, Jonathan.
These are just panic... look, these are just panic-ass trades. A trade to make a trade. And look, I am not defending the front office's lack of ability to get deals done or their lack of creativity. What I am defending is the state of non-panic, non-overreaction, and the state of legitimate flexibility that they're currently in. You are right that if we go into the season with this exact same roster, having not addressed any of our needs with regards to a competent defensive big man and some additional point of attack wing defensive help, that we will be worse than last year. That is correct. But even having said that, we are still armed with a number 17 pick in Dalton Connect. We are armed with an $18.7 million expiring contract in D'Angelo Russell, which if you want to compare to where we were at in 2022, that is not a crippling $47 million expiring contract in Russell Westbrook, right? And the Lakers still have two premier firsts that they can trade in 2029 and 2031. They don't have to do anything right now, especially when teams are being unrealistic in their asking prices for role players on bloated deals. And you want to go down the line of Jeremy Grant, Kyle Kuzma, Cam Johnson, DFS, Bruce Brown. The Lakers haven't gotten any of these guys, Tommy. They haven't traded for any of these guys. What are they doing? Guess what? No other team has traded for any of these guys, is my point. So clearly the league is at a standstill, likely waiting on what the Utah Jazz are going to do. But also it may be the case that these other teams holding these players currently just have unrealistic asking prices right now for not only the Lakers, but every team in the league, right? So it wouldn't be smart for the Lakers to be like, wait, why is nobody else trading for these guys? I'll give them two firsts for Bruce Brown. What are we doing? You know? So the other thing is, I feel like people seem to have glossed over the LeBron James interview that he did with McTen, like a week ago, where he pretty much echoed the front office's messaging that it takes two to tango. Sometimes missing out on a big name is out of your control, and we still have options and we will move forward accordingly. So for me, I like that the Lakers still have their options and their flexibility at their disposal. And I like that LeBron's aligning to the front office's stance, whether you believe him or not, whether you think he's carrying water for the front office or not. To me, that at least signals to other teams the Lakers aren't desperate or chomping at the bit to make any move. So I don't know. I, on the one hand, can say the front office is subpar, okay? On the other hand, I can also say at the same time, but these are the contexts with which they're operating under. And I would say this about any front office, not only our front office. And I don't know, I just want to make it clear, I'm not a robber front office apologist. I am a common sense apologist. And if, I don't know, if you're going to hate on Rob, just be informed in your hate is kind of what I'm trying to say to people, because it actually lends further weight and credence to your hate if you actually know all the caveats and nuances involved with Rob's job right now and the context he's working under with the rest of the CBA, with the rest of the league. I know people like to make the apron world joke, but it's true. You see it from the rest of the teams. Outside of missing out on DeJounte Murray, nobody else has traded for the guys I listed, you know?
And DeJounte Murray, by the way, costs two first-round picks.
Right, and Larry Nance Jr. and a Dyson Daniels that the Hawks actually wanted, you know, a player they actually wanted.
Recent
first-round pick. And right now I see too many fans as like rebels without a cause right now who are just lapping up the hysteria without adequately understanding the CBA and how it's changed. Like, I know it's funny to like joke about Rob Pelinka using that as an excuse, and to some extent it is an excuse, but there is also some truth to that. So I think people just need to be a little bit more patient and understand that. I mean, let's revisit this if we have the exact same team at the start of training camp, okay? But right now, I think they're going to make a move at some point. The reason why they haven't made these moves is because they're trying to make a deal and they want to make sure that these deals, whatever you think it may be, whether it's for Cam Johnson, DFS, or whatever, they want to make sure that these deals are for sure not happening before they pivot to, all right, let's do the smaller marginal moves where we get rid of Jaxson Hayes, Christian Wood, Cam Reddish. So I don't know if you have anything else to add, or I can like kind of transition us into talking about those smaller player options. But if you want to add anything else, please go ahead.
Well, the only other thing I was going to say was like, you know, every season Rob has been in charge, I'm pretty sure, right? I mean, somebody can fact check me on this. We've gone into the season with 14 guys. You know, part of the luxury of staying below that second apron is we can sign guys off waivers during the season. That has, like, always been a big tool for us. And every year we're, like, we added Spencer Dinwiddie. We added Markieff Morris. We added Andre Drummond. I mean, we're adding, like, veteran, solid players every single season with that tool. And I just feel like it's not suddenly going to be the case that we decide we don't need that. So, to your point, it's like, I don't think Rob has forgotten that, like, the roster needs a little bit of help. And certainly some players need to be consolidated. If anything, you know, one guy needs to be traded for nothing, or two guys need to be traded for one guy. So, like, something like that at minimum is probably going to happen, because I would be shocked if we went into the season with 15 guys and didn't really give ourselves the chance to even have roster flexibility to add a guy who gets waived during training camp, or, you know, something like that.
Well, I feel like a lot of the frustration and angst is coming from the fact that none of us were able to participate in that dopamine hit of the first few days of free agency like we normally are able to, right? Even with just like one or two new vet minimum signings. Right. And because of that, fans just want anything to happen. They're like jonesing for any move to occur. But really, if you take a step back, it's like, actually, we're in a good place right now. We're not in a desperate place. There are still free agents who are also waiting on what the Utah Jazz will do with their cap space and whether they actually have to resort to taking the taxpayer MLE, i.e. Gary Trent. And the Lakers have all of these options because they've waited at their disposal and they can pivot any which way. So in some senses, it's kind of like the tortoise and the hare, right? Sometimes... And people don't want to hear about patience right now, but that may inevitably be the best course of action for us. And to your point about waiting till, you know, training camp, last season we didn't sign Christian Wood till September. The year before that, we didn't sign Dennis Schroeder to the veteran minimum till September. We didn't trade THT for Pat Bev till late August. People are acting like the offseason is over and we're 2 weeks into July and Vegas Summer League hasn't even happened yet, you know? So yeah. If people are concerned, why haven't they dumped Cam Reddish and Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes or JHS for Gary Trent? They're acting like because we haven't done that yet, it means we will never do it, you know? And I think that's coming from, again, the FOMO of having missed out of the first few days of free agency and not seeing anything new happen. If you can eventually let that sentiment go and just tilt your head back and let things happen, be distracted by Summer League, I think, at least for me, that's how I'm coping with it, you know? So why don't we take it to break? When we return, let's talk about the Lakers player option guys, the veteran minimum expirings. Talk about who we'd be willing to dump, who we'd be willing to keep, and get into maybe some taxpayer MLE options. We'll talk about Gary Trent, and then if we have time, we'll also talk about the Summer League guys. So let's take it to break.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so we are back. So what can the Lakers actually do and where do they stand right now? Currently, the Lakers are $45,000 below the second apron, which means they have the ability to aggregate salaries together in a trade because they are under the second apron. Now, if they want to use their taxpayer MLE of $5.1 million and even use another veteran minimum contract on a new player, the Lakers will need to clear about $8 million to do that. So barring a larger trade where Gabe Vincent, D'Angelo Russell, Rui Hachimura, and Jared Vanderbilt go out and the Lakers tack on one of their veteran minimum expirings onto those deals, like Wood, Cam Hayes, the easiest way to free up $8 million, barring that scenario, is for the Lakers to dump some combo of JHS, who makes $3.8 million, Christian Wood, who makes $3 million, and Jaxson Hayes and Cam Reddish, who both make $2.5 million. JHS and Wood make the most money, and if you dump their salaries, you already release $6.8 million right there, so that's kind of an easy way to do that. And maybe all the Lakers want to do is open up the taxpayer MLE of $5.1 million, and maybe they retain Hayes heading into the season. But again, I think we're all waiting on the Utah Jazz domino to fall first, because if the Utah Jazz, by August 6th, they need to come up with a decision on whether to extend Lauri Markkanen or not. So everybody's waiting for that, whether another team is going to trade for Lauri Markkanen, and after that trade, will the Utah Jazz have cap space left over? If they do, then I think we'll see things pick up, including, okay, Gary Trent realizes even Utah doesn't have any cap space left. I'm willing to sign a one-year deal for the taxpayer MLE. So until the Utah situation gets sort of resolved, I think that's why we have a stalemate on trades. I think that's why we have a stalemate on the bigger free agents still waiting out there, including Gary Trent, Luke Kennard, Gordon Hayward, etc. But first, before we get to those guys, let's talk about the player option guys and why moves haven't happened yet with regards to Christian Wood, Jaxson Hayes, Cam Reddish. I think there's a misconception around there right now, or I think there's a misconception around Twitter that Christian Wood, Jaxson Hayes, and Cam Reddish are easy throwaways and should have already been off this team like yesterday, and that we are hamstrung by these guys. We're hamstrung with these guys having been given player options. And I'm going to keep hammering this point home. If you want the Lakers to make a bigger trade, or if you want the Lakers to survey for a bigger trade, the Lakers cannot preemptively move off of any of their veteran minimum expirings like Christian Wood, Jaxson Hayes, or Cam Reddish till they for sure know that they can't execute a Kyle Kuzma deal, a DFS deal, a Jeremy Grant deal. The reason being is because those guys come in handy for salary matching purposes, because as a first apron team, LA has to match salaries in trades dollar for dollar and can't take back a single dollar more in money. Here's a perfect example. Tommy, DFS makes $14.9 million, okay? Let's say the Lakers trade away all of their veteran minimum expirings, Cam, Wood, Hayes, to free up the taxpayer MLE, or just dump them preemptively to get further under the second apron. Cam, Wood, and Hayes are gone as expiring contracts that you can trade, and we're trying to get DFS at $14.9 million. You need to match DFS's $14.9 million, and if you combine Gabe Vincent's $11 million and JHS's $3.8 million, Tommy, you can't even match DFS's amount of 14.9. You get to 14.8. So now what are you going to do? You're going to have to trade Gabe Vincent and Vanderbilt to make the salaries work, or trade Vanderbilt instead, who makes, I think he makes, actually no, Vanderbilt makes $10 million. So do you see what I'm talking about? If you don't have that additional $2.5 million or $3 million in Wood's case to tack on to another deal, all of a sudden, you can't get DFS without trading an unnecessary amount of players that you could actually use, like Vanderbilt and Gabe Vincent. Are you following me?
Yeah.
So the Lakers need their veteran minimum expirings in case any serious trade materializes. Now, let's not even talk about these guys as tradable assets. Let's say in the worst case scenario, we are stuck with these bumbling, useless idiots, Tommy. Obviously, in an ideal world, if you can upgrade any one of these guys or all of these guys, you do it. But again, 90% of free agency is over. And I don't know if there are better bigs out there than a Jaxson Hayes or Christian Wood. You may argue that there are, but I don't see them. But let's say we're stuck with these guys. We are talking about players, Tommy, who legitimately helped the team last year in different sections of the season. We are not talking about Juan Toscano-Anderson, Kent Bazemore, Wayne Ellington, or even Kendrick Nunn. All guys who literally did not contribute to tangible wins. Christian Wood, Jaxson Hayes, Cam Reddish are all flawed players, but they are also all real on-court depth. Christian Wood was averaging 8-7 to start the year and playing good defense despite his shot not falling. Cam Reddish obviously had his Linsanity month and helped the Lakers go 11-2 in his first 13 starts when he was healthy, capping things off with an IST championship. Jaxson Hayes got going towards the end of the season last year and actually he actually shows up in the Lakers' third best five-man lineup in terms of overall point differential. So people are acting like, oh man, sucks. We're strapped with Jackson Hayes and Christian Wood, as if we're strapped with Trevor Ariza and Wayne Ellington, you know? And again, I feel like this is, again, lending to the overreactionary hysteria that has befallen, I feel like, a large portion of the Lakers fan base. And again, you want to upgrade these guys, but even if you're stuck with them, for them to be like your 11th, 12th, 13th guys, or maybe 10th, 11th, 12th guys, I think that's still really good depth. And all you can ask for from an end of the bench guy is that they can fill in when needed. And each of these guys has proven, and each of these guys actually started in different games for the Lakers last season at some point, that they can contribute without complaining about touches or roles. So I guess, where do you stand on just like, why haven't we dumped these guys, and whether you actually see some on-court value in Cam Reddish, Christian Wood, and Jackson Hayes?
On this last, you know, question you're raising right here, I'll even take it a step further than what you said. I mean, Drew Eubanks got a 2-year, $10 million deal. Jackson Hayes did us a favor by opting in. It was a summer of big men. I swear to God, the only reason this guy opted in was because he played with JJ Redick before. Yep. And maybe they, you know, JJ was able to convince him to stay, because it's like you said, it feels ridiculous that we have to constantly like caveat everything like this. No one is saying that Jackson Hayes is like currently the lottery player that everybody thought he was when he thought he was going to develop into when he was drafted in the lottery, right? We're not suggesting that, but what we are saying is like, we saw this guy play a whole season. He can play basketball. He's super athletic. He's young. He can run. He can set screens. He has some upside to maybe learn some things defensively. You're not getting another player like that for the veteran minimum. You're going to get an old guy who is like borderline out of the league. So by taking that player option, Jackson Hayes actually did us a service. I think you can make the same argument for Christian Wood. I mean, people forget, like, that Christian Wood 1 year or 1+1 veteran minimum was supposed to be like a prove it deal, right? Like, you know, you kind of flamed out for the Mavericks in the playoffs. Why don't you come play one season on a contender? You'll have a role, like get your numbers, and then you'll go get the contract you were looking for that Dallas wouldn't give you. So obviously that didn't work out for him for a variety of reasons. Namely, he was injured like more than half the season, / was playing through injuries. The lineups that Darvin Ham was using, you know, often didn't make sense, and you know, et cetera, right? And so, you know, again, I'm not saying that we know for sure that Christian Wood is like better than a minimum level player at this point, but it's certainly like a question. You know what I mean? So it's like, it would not be unreasonable to give him that contract right now, given the options that are out there and our needs. So I just don't really buy that, like, this was like Rob giving these guys 1+1s to like lock them up last summer was this huge catastrophic thing that, like, it seems like so many are trying to make it out to be. And so that's like the big point. I think on everything else, I agree with what you said. It's like, you know, beyond not knowing what salaries we're going to need to aggregate, we also don't know what positions we're going to have of need. If we do like an aggregation trade where we're trading multiple guys for one guy, you know, number one, we don't know who that guy's going to be. You know, things change in the NBA fast. Clearly the guys that are available to us right now, we either are not willing to pay their price, or, you know, the teams are, well, I guess relatedly, you know, possibly because the teams are unwilling to like budge on what they're asking for. That can change in one afternoon. Okay. You know, Danny Ainge picks up the phone one day and says, you know, to whatever team is trying to trade for Markkanen, hey, we changed our mind. We'll take that deal that you had on the table. Suddenly all the dominoes fall in a matter of an hour. Right. And what do you do if you're sitting there and you're like, okay, cool, we traded two forwards, or we traded Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes to clear this like roster space that everybody wanted for some reason.
And then now
we do a trade for Bismack Biyombo.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then for Bismack Biyombo. And now we do some trade where it's like we have to aggregate salaries, and we end up aggregating like other, like we end up trading Rui, and we have to, oh no, now we have to trade, like Dalton Connect has to be involved. Okay, cool. Now we've like traded every forward on our team except Vanderbilt and LeBron. You know what I mean? And it's like, and so people are like not considering this. Like these guys that are sitting around are not make or break championship guys the same way that Dennis Schroeder wasn't a make or break championship guy when he was signed in September. You know, the same way that Christian Wood last year was not like a make or break championship guy. These are like depth pieces who can certainly help. I don't want to like downplay that, but like we're operating within a range of replaceability, I guess, is what I'm saying. Like none of these guys individually are, you know, sell the franchise, sell your potential, you know, options moving forward to lock the guy up now.
Yeah, but as you pointed out, they still help you on and off the court. And if you go into the season with these three guys, I want to remind everybody that by December 15th, you can aggregate as many veteran minimum contracts into a larger deal as you want. And you can actually just use veteran minimum contracts, which means Cam Reddish, Christian Wood, and Jaxson Hayes, if for some reason they're still on the roster by December 15th, you can aggregate all of them together, and that's $9 million expiring. We didn't have expirings at last year's trade deadline, you know? So there is benefit to having them, not only because you saw last season, they can contribute in a pinch, even Cam Reddish. Although I think you'd agree with me, out of the three, he's probably the most expendable because you want to give most of the minutes next year to Max Christie and even start developing Maxwell Lewis more. But I guess if you had to pick, let's say two of these guys have to go, Tommy, who are the two guys for you? And do you agree with right now, the rumors are, the sentiment is that the Lakers are prioritizing Jaxson Hayes. Do you agree with that notion?
I 100% agree with that. I mean, a true big man is a huge, huge position of need. For us, it's like the small ball sort of four or five guys like Christian Wood. You can, I'm not saying it's easy to find those guys, especially guys who have put up the career numbers that Wood has, but like we need defense and we need interior defense, and the skill set that Wood has, while of course it helps, any depth on our type of roster and in today's NBA helps, but we really need defense. And so like Jaxson Hayes is a big body. He's strong. He's athletic. I'm not saying he's a world beater defensively, but he slides his feet on the perimeter and he can contest at the rim. And he's just big. And sometimes, like, you just need size. So if we're prioritizing one of the three, I also would prioritize Hayes.
Yeah, I agree with you. I preferably would like to wait and see and keep both bigs until we have a trade target a legitimate big lined up. Because I don't think there's anyone as talented as Wood out there, given his history of, I mean, last season his offense, you know, dropped off for whatever reason. But that's actually an outlier based off of what he's done in previous years. And Wood gives you like a different look at the four or five spot. And if you bake into your calculus that Anthony Davis is likely going to miss time next season because he didn't miss any time this season, the primary reason for bringing Christian Wood in was to replace Anthony Davis or approximate what AD gives you, right? So in that sense, Wood has value. But if I had to choose, I agree with you, I'm choosing Jaxson Hayes, not only for everything you said, but because he gives the Lakers something that they lack. This injection of athleticism, explosiveness, and energy that the team desperately needs. He runs the floor like a gazelle. I mean, God damn it, he had a in-between-the-legs like dunk in transition this season, right? And so yeah. The Lakers need that boundless Tasmanian devil-like activity because it's infectious to the whole team and something that this older team can feed off of. So I agree with you. If we're keeping one of these guys, keep Jaxson Hayes. Now, with regards to the taxpayer, Emily, here are the quick options for that. If the Lakers choose to get off of Christian Wood or Cam Reddish or both, there's Gary Trent, Spencer Dinwiddie, Gordon Hayward, Luke Kennard, Markelle Fultz. The only big out there right now is Precious Achiuwa, but that's the list. Gary Trent, Spencer Dinwiddie, Gordon Hayward, Luke Kennard, Markelle Fultz, Precious Achiuwa. Is it safe to assume that Gary Trent, clutch client, is your number one target out of this list?
Yes, by far.
For sure. Okay, so I want to talk about Gary Trent really quick because This is how you know that the offseason for Lakers Nation has reached nonsensical levels of hysteria. When people are already preemptively bitching and moaning about missing out on Gary Trent Jr., when Gary Trent Jr. has not picked a team yet. But people are doing that and asking, why haven't the Lakers freed up $6 million yet so we can sign Gary Trent Jr.? Tommy, I don't know if you know this or not, but teams don't preemptively do things without knowing that they're going to get the player in question, you know? And yeah. I don't know, maybe it's because Gary Trent hasn't told the Lakers, who, again, are run by Clutch. Maybe he hasn't told Rich Paul that I'm ready to sign with you for the taxpayer, Emily. Why would the Lakers then dump Christian Wood and Cam Reddish without knowing that they have Gary Trent in the bag? You know, this is not how negotiations work. I don't know what weird fantasy land people are living in where they just want to be hysterical for no reason, but I kind of feel like that's the place we're in. But Tommy, let's say that Gary Trent is ready and willing to take the MLE. I don't know where I'm going with this. Let's say Gary Trent is willing to take the taxpayer MLE, and we have dumped, let's say it's Christian Wood and Cam Reddish, and we have enough space. Would you then also dump JHS to open up another roster spot so that we can sign a veteran minimum? And I'm mainly talking about maybe signing Spencer Dinwiddie, because if that's the case, I almost wonder if you can get both Gary Trent for the taxpayer, Emily, and Spencer Dinwiddie for the veteran minimum exception. What are your thoughts about that proposal?
If you can get both of those guys for that, like, you know, sort of monetary restrictions we have to work with, I think you definitely do that. And not to get too far on a tangent, but the one quick thing I'll say is, like, we cannot go into the season on a 15-man roster with three guys who cannot play currently in the NBA. And that is, you know, Bronny, who's we just signed, obviously. I highly doubt we're going to trade this dude. So it's like, you know, make up your mind about him, whatever. I don't care. I don't care what your opinion is. We're not trading him. So it's like Bronny, Maxwell Lewis, and JHS currently cannot play in the NBA. One of those three guys has to go. Yeah, one of those three guys has to go. So this sort of plan you've laid out sort of kills two birds with one stone, because it drops JHS too.
And also it gives you already in-house insurance to be able to then flip D'Angelo Russell, right? Because the biggest issue is, if you're going to flip D'Angelo Russell, you have to make up for the playmaking and the shooting. And while you kind of have it split up between Spencer Dinwiddie and Gary Trent Jr., at least you have a backup plan, right? Even before you flip D'Angelo Russell. Or maybe they do these two, maybe they do all these moves in conjunction. They sign Gary Trent Jr., also sign Spencer Dinwiddie, and then they have a trade for D'Angelo Russell for a wing, and then everything becomes a lot more palatable, right? But again, these are a lot of moving parts, and if you're wondering why haven't these moves happened yet, it's because you have to make sure that these parts move in conjunction with one another, right? So, all right, really quickly, Tommy, do you have any summer league impressions on Dalton Connect, Bronny James, or Maxwell Lewis? Take it however way you want to go.
Yeah, just I guess I'll get quick thoughts on each. On Dalton Connect, I've been pretty impressed with his strength. I think that was one of the things you expect from, like, an older player. I thought in the first game he got bodied a little bit in the paint, particularly when he was going for rebounds, which was, like, one of his strengths, I think, that we talked about coming out of college. I feel like that got better. I feel like certainly by game three, I mean, the numbers showed it, but he looked a little more comfortable out there getting his shots. He is the only player on that summer league roster who can get a shot for himself. It's pretty crazy to watch. Maybe Maxwell Lewis can. And so I guess moving on to Maxwell, up and down, I mean, I think game one and the second half of game three, you saw the flashes of why we took Maxwell Lewis. I just think that, like, you know, there's this, and it's like part of the problem with this is, like, we've had guys in the past set the bar too high for this kind of thing. You know, Brandon Ingram, I think, came back for second year of summer league, played one game, and then they stopped playing him. I can't remember. I don't think Austin Reeves came back for his second year, but if he did, they pulled him out after, like, one game. Max Christie had, like, a dominant, you know, second year as, like, a summer league guy. So we've been, like, a little bit spoiled in that sense. Maxwell Lewis is like another year away. And I'm not saying that, like, I know I just said 2 seconds ago that he can't play in the NBA right now. I mostly meant like in meaningful minutes. Like, I still think you can find minutes for him, like, to hopefully like kind of develop him a little bit more with the big league team this year. But, you know, he's still like pretty raw. And, you know, maybe they knew this going into it, that this was going to be like a longer term project, but I'm not super, you know, I don't have a strong feeling that this guy is going to be like a significant contributor for us this year. And that's fine, by the way. He's still young and he's a second year player.
Can I say really quick, I feel like there's a tangible difference from his role this year and last year, where last year they put him in a tertiary, strictly off-ball role, and you saw him actually taking more threes. This year, I feel like we're getting the Ron Holland G League Ignite version of Maxwell Lewis, where he's like, where they're like, for whatever reason, here's the ball, dude, do stuff with it. And I feel like he's kind of getting lost in the mud a little bit, pressing at times, rushing shots, forcing shots. So from that end, it feels kind of Cam Reddish-y. But yeah, you have seen there is another side of Maxwell Lewis, and the side that was so promising in Pepperdine, where he is the most Dr. Jekyll Hyde player we've seen in a while, where there's another version of Maxwell Lewis where he looks very sound, very fluid. He's gliding on the court, playing with pace, or he's playing at his own pace, knows how to use his gravity on these drives of his to make smart kickouts. He's done a lot of really nice, he's had a lot of really nice, simple, and effective passing reads to guys out on the perimeter, like Dalton Connect for a three, Blake Hinson for a three. And so I think it's just about him continuing to get these reps and refining his skills so that he doesn't venture more into that deer in a headlights type play of his. Because there are two sides to Maxwell Lewis. The deer in the headlights, I'm Cam Reddish and kind of just like fumbling all over myself, Maxwell Lewis. And then there's the, look at me, I know how to use my strides to get into the lane and put up this nifty finish. And also I can just jam it over your head. And I have some playmaking skills as well. And all of a sudden the game has slowed down for me. So it's all about making that latter version more of the majority in Maxwell Lewis's game. And to your point, I think that's what this season is going to be about for him, continuing to develop that skill and those smarts, I guess. But your last thoughts on Bronny James.
Yeah. So the Bronny thing is just, and this is going to be, I mean, fortunately, he's probably not going to play that much this year, unless we have catastrophic injuries throughout the roster. But this is going to be painful to talk about, because people have such crazy opinions on this kid. And I feel like, and maybe people think my opinion on him is crazy. I think there is zero doubt in my mind that athletically, by measurables, by like all the soft factors that you would look at for an NBA player, Bronny James like belongs in the NBA. Now, I think the great experiment that we're trying to run here, right, is like, is can you take all of those things, put this person into an NBA training regimen, and actually teach them how to play basketball? That I think, and that sounds a little bit more mean than I intended to be, but like, for as locked in as Bronny James looks defensively, he is totally lost offensively. And I think a big part of that is confidence. He doesn't have the confidence in his jumper. You know, obviously he did really well shooting at the combine, but that's different than in-game shooting. He, you know, whatever, playmaking, he's not going to be Chris Paul. Okay. That's fine. I think what Bronny James should strive for, and I think what he can achieve if he can come remotely close to hitting a decent, you know, a standstill spot up jumper once in a while, is like a more athletic version of Gabe Vincent. I mean, they're both like 6'2 guards. You know, Gabe Vincent is a career 32% 3-point shooter who had like a hot run in the playoffs that gave him this $10 million contract that we paid him. But like, you know, he hangs his hat on defense. He's arguably unsized, but he plays bigger than his size. He's got good wingspan and he's got good strength for his size. And Bronny has a lot of those things. Plus he has like a 41-inch vertical. So the tools are there and you can't, I led this off with like, this is going to be painful to talk about, because the discourse around this is like, in my actual opinion, if you know basketball, you could not watch game 3 of the Summer League and say that Bronny James played bad defense. he played some of the best on-ball point-of-attack defense I personally have seen on a summer league team since, like, Alex Caruso. And maybe that's an exaggeration. Maybe that's, like, you know, we just haven't had great defenders. His ability to slide his feet without using his hands, his awareness, all of this at, like, 19 years old, I'm super impressed by him as a defensive prospect. Now, that whether that means he should have been drafted, whether that means he should have gotten a guaranteed contract, I'm not going to get into that. I just, like, as a prospect, I see what they're doing. And, you know, can they teach this kid how to do the bare minimum offensively to be, like, a Gabe Vincent-style player? I don't know, but I think it's worth the experiment. And the fact that there are people out there suggesting that there's no way that this kid should have ever gotten a shot to play in the NBA if his dad wasn't LeBron, like, I find it disingenuous. Bronny has, like, a plus 6-inch wingspan. He, again, tested one of the highest verticals. He was a highly regarded high school recruit who had a down year after open heart surgery. Like, there are a lot of people who have been drafted under similar circumstances, who, you know, we don't know if they're going to pan out, but, you know, if they do, it could end up being a steal. And that's all you can really ask for with the number 55 pick. And so, again, my overall take with Bronny is I really am excited to see more reps, because I find that his explosiveness and speed, yeah, I mean, like, it pops off the screen when he explodes into a passing lane, even when he doesn't get the steal. Like, it pops off the screen when you watch it. And so I hope people are able to, like, put whatever narratives they have swirling through their mind across and just watch what this kid can actually do, because he is certainly not the first one-way prospect we've ever drafted or brought into our G League team or brought into our development system, or, you know, for our team or for, you know, many other teams. He's a raw offensive prospect who brings something to the table defensively. And I'm excited to see where we can take that.
Well, you mentioned, like, a more athletic Gabe Vincent, and you know who that player is? It's Bruce Brown, if everything shakes out right. Because, I mean, Bruce Brown was a point guard in college. Bronny also has some on-ball skills that he hasn't been able to show. But let's say the shot never materializes, and maybe not even the ball handling or playmaking. Who then do you have? I think you have, like, a Gary Payton II type prototype with Bronny James, right? And that is a very good player, and a player that you can use with the athleticism, the speed, and the point of attack defense. And you want to talk about soft basketball skills. What about 3 steals and 2 blocks? Like, that is 5 total stocks from a 6'2", 6'3 guard. And that is not something to scoff at or overlook. And yet we are making fun of this kid because he only put 3 points. And I think it's coming from, I think he gets unfairly covered because the actual media coverage surrounding him does him no favors. You see, like, 3-minute highlight reels of him put onto YouTube based off of 3 steals and 2 blocks. And people are like, wait, why does Keontae George's highlight reel of 31 points, why is that only 1 minute? And Bronny James gets 3 minutes of coverage, right? So I don't think the coverage surrounding him does him any favors, but I just hope that he puts his head down, continues to work, because if we're just evaluating the basketball of it all, to your point, there is a foundation here to actually build off of with Bronny James. So, with that said, that'll do it for this episode. Vegas Summer League is coming up this weekend, and who knows? Maybe this is the time that we'll see some action. We'll see trades pick up again around the league. And yeah, maybe we will get some of those consolidation moves, and maybe we will finally dump Christian Wood. God damn it. But yeah, with that said, everybody have fun. If you're heading out to Vegas, please stay cool and drink lots of water. It's probably like 125 degrees out there right now. But yeah, Tommy, I will catch you later.
Peace.
See ya.